Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. You may have heard me talk about this before, but in November of 2018, I had the good fortune to attend the Parliament of World Religions in Toronto, in Canada. And from that wonderful experience, I've been able to make some connections, and we've had several people from the Parliament who have been on this program so far. Now, I don't know if our guest was there, but I didn't meet him there, but I met an associate of his. For the past couple of years, I've been telling people, I want to do a program on Ahmadiyya Islam. And for some reason, a guest never crossed my path. And when I was at the Parliament, I met a wonderful woman who gave me her card and says, we can take care of this. So she put me in touch with Fazil Khan, who is an Ahmadiyya Muslim. Now, what's interesting, if you've not heard about an Ahmadiyya Muslim, one way that you can kind of sort of compare them to is the Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints, the Mormons, in that they claim to be Christian, but many people who are Christian otherwise, or mainstream Christian or Catholic, do not look at them as Christian. So there's a bit of tension there. There's a controversy. And of course, that controversy and that tension really exploded in the 19th century, where there was actual physical violence towards Mormons. Thankfully, we really don't have a whole lot of that today, but Ahmadiyya Muslims, they are in a bit of a different situation in that, for instance, in Pakistan, they are not considered Muslim, even though they maintain the five pillars of Islam. So we're going to talk about Ahmadiyya Islam. How is it different from Sunni Islam or any other variety of Islam? And why are they persecuted so much? Let me tell you a little bit about our guest. His name is Fazil Khan. He was born in the Fiji Islands and grew up in Vancouver, Canada. He was educated at Simon Fraser University in British Columbia, the University of Windsor in Ontario, and Case Western Reserve University. He currently lives in Columbus, Ohio, where he practices civil rights law. Fazil is also the secretary of the Lahore Ahmadiyya Islamic Society, which is the U.S. branch of the International Lahore Ahmadiyya Movement. He is active in various interfaith programs in Central Ohio, including being a past president of the Interfaith Center for Peace and past board member of the Horizon Prison Initiative, and frequently speaks on Islam at interfaith forums. He is also a contributor to the book Quran in Conversation, compiled by Professor Michael Burkle of Earlham College. So we welcome to Common Threads Mr. Fazil Khan. Hello, Fazil.
Hi, Fred. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Certainly. So as I just mentioned in my introduction, I've wanted to speak to someone who was a part of the Ahmadiyya fold for a couple of years now. And I will admit to not even being aware of your existence until probably about 5 years ago. And that is because if there are any Ahmadiyya Muslims here in Grand Rapids, Michigan, I have not met them. That's something I don't know. And none of the Muslims whom I know, and I know quite a few here, never brought up the subject. And I can tell you, Fazil, that on this program, of course, over the years, and we've been on the air well over two decades, we've had many Muslims on the program. So I think our audience is fairly familiar with the basics of Islam. So let's talk about the origins and the philosophy and theology of Ahmadiyya Islam, if you would.
Sure. And I'm sorry to have missed you at the Parliament of World Religions. I heard that you had stopped by. I must have not been manning our booth at that moment.
Oh, you were there, eh?
I was there. I had a great time. It was an amazing forum. I also attended the one in Salt Lake City about 4 years prior. I'm not sure if you were there or not.
No, this was my first one, I really enjoyed it. I was there for all 7 days, and it was yes, fantastic. And I just loved the people I met. And as I said a few minutes ago, because of that, several people ended up on this program, such as yourself, indirectly, sure, though it may be. But go on.
Sure. Well, I think it would be beneficial to note now, there are two sections of the Ahmadiyya movement. And this was a result of the split in the movement back in 1914. This was based on some theological differences that arose within the Ahmadiyya community. Now, both groups refer to themselves as Ahmadis, and they're usually distinguished by the cities of their respective headquarters at the time of the split in the movement. One group remained in Qadian, and that is in India. And so a lot of people refer to them as Qadiani Ahmadis, and the other separated and established their headquarters in Lahore, which is in Pakistan today, post-partition, and is normally referred to as Lahori Ahmadis. So I represent the Lahore section of the Ahmadiyya movement, and the Lahore Ahmadiyya movement has branches all over the world, and I'm the secretary of the U.S. branch. And as you mentioned, our headquarters is actually in Columbus, Ohio. And so the split in the movement occurred in 1914, and this was actually 6 years after the founder of this movement had passed away. And maybe I can get into the differing beliefs of the two sections of the movement later when we discuss the beliefs of the movement.
Yeah, I would say for right now, let's talk about this founder. I was not aware that Ahmadiyya is a relatively new movement in Islam. If you're telling me that he died, what, the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th?
That's right. He actually passed away in the year 1908. So it is a relatively new movement within Islam. And it was founded by a saintly Muslim personality from the Punjab region of India. And his name was Mirza Ghulam Ahmad. And now, when I use his name, I say Hazrat Mirza Ghulam Ahmad. Hazrat is just an honorific term. It's a title of respect. So Hazrat Mirza Ghulam Ahmad was a renowned scholar of Islam. And he became widely respected for defending Islam from various objections and critiques being made against it. And this was during Britain's imperial era in India, mid to late 1800s, and it was a time when the religion of Islam was being heavily scrutinized and denounced by Western writers and also Christian missionaries. So it was during this time that Hazrat Mirza Ghulam Ahmad was very actively engaged in defending the principles of Islam through his writings and his lectures and public debate. And he would not only respond to critics, but he would present Islam in a manner that revealed its rational and spiritual teachings, lessons that seemed to have been forgotten over the ages by many Muslims themselves. And by defending Islam in this manner, he became regarded as a champion of the cause of Islamic revival in the eyes of prominent Muslim leaders of the time in the Indian subcontinent. And it was in 1889 that Hazrat Mirza Ghulam Ahmad formed an organization, the Ahmadiyya Movement, to carry on this work of responding to criticisms made against Islam and promoting its true spiritual lessons to the world. And I guess the significance of the name Ahmadiyya is important. He named the movement Ahmadiyya after the Holy Prophet Muhammad's other name, Ahmad. See, many people believe the movement was named after his own name, but that's not correct. His name was Ghulam Ahmad, which means slave or servant of Ahmad. And Prophet Muhammad had two names, Muhammad and Ahmad, and both are mentioned in the Quran, and both have specific significances.
Now, excuse me. Let me stop you for just a second. When you say that he created this movement, was his goal to essentially reform Islam? I mean, was he looking for? Was his ambition to actually create a new awareness and a new understanding of Islam that everyone could embrace, or did he understand that he was creating a sect or a movement within the greater Islam that might always be different from worldwide global Islam?
Right, that's a very good question. See, what Hazrat Mirza Ghulam Ahmad claimed, he claimed to be what's called a mujaddid of the current age. See, a mujaddid is a reformer or reviver of the faith. And in fact, Prophet Muhammad had prophesied that a mujaddid would arise at the head of every century to revive the faith of Muslims. And this was a tradition that's accepted by the majority Muslim, Sunni Muslims. There were many famous saintly figures of the past who were regarded as mujaddids of their time. For instance, like Imam al-Ghazali, Muhyiddin Chisti, Ibn Arabi, Shah Waliullah Delvi. So likewise, what Hazrat Mirza Ghulam Ahmad claimed was to be a mujaddid of the 14th century of the Islamic calendar. And the role or the function of a mujaddid is simply to revive some aspect of Islam that needs revival. And that would entail clarifying or correcting some belief or issue. And so a mujaddid doesn't bring anything new per se, but only provides insight into some belief or issue that is being misunderstood or misinterpreted by Muslims. So, as Lahore Ahmadis, we don't believe that the Ahmadiyya movement is a separate sect per se. We consider ourselves to be Sunni Muslims. We follow the Hanafi madhab in terms of our practices. We consider this movement to simply be a group of Muslims who are devoted to this very specific cause.
Let me break in right now for just a moment, Fazil, and just remind people that they're listening to WGVU. The program is Common Threads. My name is Fred Stella, and Fazil Khan is our guest today, and we're talking about Ahmadiyya Islam. So please continue.
Sure. So, yeah, as I was mentioning, as a result, we don't consider ourselves a separate sect as such, but just a group that is devoted to this specific cause. And the objective is to promote the true spiritual teachings of Islam to the world. And this entails working with both non-Muslims and Muslims as well. So in Western countries, we make our literature, which is primarily in English, available for people wanting to know what Islam is actually about. And and our literature is available in all the major bookstores in the U.S. Many universities use them as textbooks in Islamic studies and religious studies classes. But we also have our literature translated into a host of different languages, and we work to get this literature into the hands of local populations in Muslim countries around the world as well. So that people have an opportunity to learn about the religion for themselves in their own language and not rely on what is unfortunately sometimes the case, a politically motivated cleric telling them what their religion is about.
So let me ask you this. You mentioned a litany of previous reformers from different centuries.
Right.
And would you say that these reformers were wholeheartedly accepted by the greater Muslim community with none of the friction that you folks are dealing with? Or has there always been a suspicion when somebody rises up as a reformer?
Yeah, that's a very good point. What I would say is that for the most part, these previous reformers, revivers of the faith, also faced very severe opposition at the time of their reformatory work. Usually it would be, many years after, centuries later, that people would appreciate the reformative teachings and lessons that were being advanced by these individuals. So the founder of this particular movement and I guess his followers are facing in terms of opposition is not really anything new. This seems to be a consistent pattern, not only with these reformers, but as we see with all, religious personalities, founders of the various faith traditions, that there was very severe opposition. I like how someone once put it that, God doesn't send a prophet to the world when everything is going okay. Mm-hmm. So when there are times of difficulty and need for reform, that's when we see these spiritually enlightened individuals arising.
Right. I have a hard time imagining somebody just appearing, at the court of the leaders of a religion and saying, you're not doing everything just right. And all of these leaders going,
right.
Oh, thank you so much. We needed somebody to
exactly.
Tell us that we're idiots.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So it is conceivable that a century from now, or less or more, all of a sudden, the greater Muslim community might look back at the teachings that you're propagating right now and going, hey, there might be something to that.
Right. Well, I would say that many of the reforms, the specific issues and topics that Hazrat Mirza Ghulam Ahmad addressed have already been accepted by Muslims, especially in the West. One of the incorrect views and understandings about Islam's held among Muslims concerned this concept of jihad. And what Hazrat Mirza Ghulam Ahmad did was reject this fundamental understanding of what this concept entailed. And he taught that jihad, in fact, its primary significance is a spiritual striving, a battle within, and that, you know, this is its meaning from the primary sources of Islam, from the Quran and from the Hadith, and that the term jihad, sure, can be applied under certain circumstances to defending oneself or others in the face of injustice and tyranny, but that is not its primary significance. And that, this concept, this understanding of Islam is very prominently accepted in the West.
Very much so. Yeah. I don't know any of any Muslim
right.
who would disagree with that concept.
Exactly.
Of course, all of my Muslim friends are here in the West.
Right. Now, but interestingly, when Hazrat Mirza Ghulam Ahmad had advanced this understanding of what jihad entailed, he was severely opposed at the time. People had declared that he is abrogating a principle of Islam. And this was actually one of the major reasons for the opposition. Now, you have to understand, this was also, put in context and perspective, the time that we're talking about. This was under British colonial rule, and there were a lot of Muslim groups that were stating that they should engage in a warlike jihad against the British. So what Hazrat Mirza Ghulam Ahmad explained is that jihad, according to the Quran, in terms of defending oneself from injustice and tyranny, primarily has to do when one is deprived freedom of religion, when one does not permit others to practice their faith. That is the type of justification for when one can defend themselves. And he refers to the specific Quranic verses that state that you are to defend those whose temples and churches and mosques are being torn down. It is when there is religious persecution that you not only are then permitted, it's not a command, it's just a permission to defend yourself, but also others who are being religiously persecuted. So what he explained was that those conditions weren't met at the time. Under British rule, Muslims were allowed to practice their faith. There was no restriction on them being Muslim and fulfilling their Islamic obligations. So it is in that context that he was explaining what this correct meaning of jihad actually entailed, that he was opposed by many groups who felt they were justified in engaging in a warlike jihad against the British.
So why don't we move? Well, we have just a few minutes left. We've got about 3 minutes. Why don't we start the conversation at least, and then we can bring this up. We can pick it up next week. But you mentioned that there was a split. I believe you said, was it 1914? When was the split?
Correct.
So you split between the what is now a Pakistani segment or wing, and then you also have an Indian wing. Although it just so happens that those two cities are now in different countries. They weren't in a different country in 1914.
That's absolutely right. Right. So, now, and this really does tie in with this issue about the opposition to the movement. The opposition is primarily do to the belief of the other section of the Ahmadiyya movement, the Qadian section. They believe that the founder of the movement was a prophet. Now, Hazrat Mirza Ghulam Ahmad went to great pains to clarify, you know, repeatedly that the terms prophet and messenger found in his writings are used in a metaphorical manner. That's commonly used in Sufi literature and are not to be taken in a real sense. But the Qadian section of the movement takes these terms literally. And you know, we know that there's a fundamental belief held by all other Muslims that Prophet Muhammad is the last prophet. So Muslims reacted to this unique belief held by the Qadian section of the movement, and they were declared to be outside the pale of Islam for holding this belief that was in contravention to this fundamental principle of Prophet Muhammad being the last prophet. And they lump the Lahore section of the movement as well in these denunciations, despite the fact that the Lahore Ahmadis don't hold this belief. In fact, it was the founders of the Lahore Ahmadiyya group separated from the Qadian section because of this belief.
Well, why don't we stop right there, Fazil, and we can pick up this conversation next week because we are out of time. But I really appreciate your explanation of everything. You make it very understandable.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Certainly. So you've been listening to Common Threads on WGVU-FM. My name is Fred Stella, and my guest today has been Fazil Khan, and we're talking about the Ahmadiyya movement within Islam, and we will continue that conversation next week, right here on WGVU.